I'm Karen Nicoletti, and I'm going to be reading a piece of a chapter from my thesis. I basically wrote one extended prose thesis, and so just a little bit of background because it's kind of in the middle of the story. It's about a jazz saxophone player who drops out of Juilliard in his second year and works for about 9 or 10 years in a jazz club in New York, and then winds up performing on a subway platform. So this scene, the thesis itself sort of goes back and forth between scenes that take place on the platform in the present over the course of one day and sort of in the past in the 9 or 10 years where he's working at the jazz club and sort of what leads him to be there. So I'm going to be reading from a chapter that takes place on the platform. My Selmer has scars. They're inevitable for a saxophone through the years, but it only has one that's real bad. It's a flesh wound on the bell, so really more a cosmetic problem. Everything still plays fine. It's a fresh wound, though, made by some idiot down here on the platform about a month ago who tripped and fell into me. I don't know what the hell he had in his suitcase, but the zipper or the strap clip or something sharp scraped the side and marked my poor horn forever. And that asshole got away without so much as a dent. He just brushed himself off and kept walking. How about three blind mice? Nothing is more satisfying than making a simple tune like a nursery rhyme into a complex set of riffs that move through modes and keys like they're jelly. I'm going to see how long I can keep it up. One time, I made the alphabet last 10 minutes. It was a very quiet day, maybe a holiday, and the trains were on a different schedule. My Selmer's Alt-C key is a little rickety, too. I forget about that one until I hear it clanging against the key next to it, ruining the sweet line I've just thought up. That scar is a bigger deal, but there's no one to be mad at because it's my fault. I don't remember the fall that bent the perfect triplet of chiclet-shaped keys some night in the late days of my time at the Bluebird. A sax with rickety keys is sad because when you're playing really well, you forget the instrument's there somehow. But every time you hear that awful sound of metal against metal, your playing becomes a physical thing again and you lose that feeling. They all ran after the farmer's wife. I make the line chromatic, adding a few semitones between each lyric. There's a guy by the stairs who's been watching me for a while now. A few trains at least have gone by each way since he's picked that spot by the stairs and leaned up against that handrail with the chipping paint. He's got his arms crossed in a striped sweater that alternates between leafy green and soily beige, real earth tones. The lines of his sweater are crossed by one of those messenger bags. He looks like he's lost his coffee shop. He's got to be a professor. James Murphy will go with. One of those young college professors who needs to go by Professor Murphy to get respect from his students. He was going to grow a beard, too, but the stubble grew in these strange patches of too thin hairs, so he started shaving again in less than a week. He'd never bothered trying a tie out, though. From the look on the young professor's face, I know he's going to come over here for a chat. It's no big deal, really, meeting the talkative ones who want to play Get to Know the Subway Musician. I have a few regulars who come over here to chat when they pass through. Three or four musicians who've decided after a while that they know me and they want to know what I'm doing here. I've told them each a different story. My favorite is the flute player who thinks I suffer from photosensitivity. She believed me when I said I live down here to avoid the dangerous commute. Then there's a psychiatrist from the West Village who likes to talk about my fear of commitment to the world or something, I don't know. I tell him every time I see him that I'm the eccentric husband of a famous French singer, but I think he doesn't believe me. And there's a really spunky old lady with dyed red hair, not copper or auburn, but actually red, like a Crayola crayon, who brings me cookies from her bakery on Friday afternoons. Sometimes I stay late until she comes down here. But this guy's new, and I feel like I'm going to have to answer a lot of tough questions if he starts to talk. I'm not sure I care to hear the kinds of things an English professor would have to say to me. I'm back around at the top of the tune again and through the lines, three blind mice. The professor is distracting me from doing anything really cool with the head of the tune. See how they run. You can take a line like that and go crazy for at least 16 bars. And when you base the riffs and the melody, you can make that line snake all around itself and come out with some clear, delicious nonsense where every word is in the notes that you've picked. See how they run. See they run, see they run, see how they run. Run, run. Professor Murphy's walking towards me now like he's going to say something, and I think about running. I want to beat 10 minutes of the alphabet with this improvisation. There's a train coming now, I could just get on and keep going another 10 minutes, or just ride the thing through to the end of the line. But when you work inside a train car, things are different. People always seem bitter when Gabriel, the subway evangelist, gets in the train car with them, and it's not just because he's trying to save their souls. We were in Paris when I was a kid, and a skinny guy with hair that stuck out in every direction got into our metro car with a portable boombox and an amp strapped to a two-wheel dolly. Then he started singing La Bamba into a microphone. I was 9, so I thought it was pretty funny, and it didn't help that Gavin kept nudging me and giggling. But then the guy finished and walked around the train with a plastic bucket, asking people specifically for donations. I stared at my feet, and I stopped laughing when that white pail flashed by my eyes. Now, there's too much confrontation in train car performance. And besides, I've made good money today, and I'd have to leave it all if I was going to make a quick getaway. They all run after the farmer's wife. They all, the farmer's wife. They all run after the farmer's wife. That's a Selmer Mark VI you got, right? I wasn't expecting that, and choke on the really elaborate riff I was starting about the farmer's very aggressive wife. I had some good stuff planned for when she cuts off their tails with that carving knife, but I lower my socks and let it hang from my neck. Yeah, you know Saxes. Of course, I know Selmer's at least, especially the VI. That's a vintage horn, hasn't been sold since the 70s, right? He's right. I look at him more closely now, but the only new thing I notice is his scruff coming in thick and even on his face. I guess he could grow a beard, if he wanted to. Either way, he seems to know a lot for an English professor. That one been in your family, he's asking me now? I laugh, thinking about my dad's old joke that he plays the radio and that time my mother asked me to teach her chopsticks on the piano. Then I realize I can use this chatty professor to my advantage. It's noon now, and my stomach's been churning for the last few numbers. With the lunchtime rush just starting to fill the platform, it'd be a waste to pack up and buy lunch by now. A guy goes by while I'm looking at Murphy and drops $2 in my case, and I'm not even playing. Nah, I say, trying to sound thoughtful. My parents don't play, and I'm an only child. Gavin and his trumpet aren't really important to the story. What is important is anything interesting enough to get me a sandwich. Monty's, right up on the corner, serves roast beef so rare it bleeds. She's a rescue, actually, I say, running my thumb across the neck of the horn fondly. Found her around the time my parents left me, alone and underage, to fend for myself when I dropped out of school. So in a way, really, I pause and look up with real meaningful eyes. She rescued me. When I look up and he's smiling, I can't tell if it's because he knows I'm full of shit or because he's got to hear more. The professor's a tough one to read. I can tell you the story, I say, like he's asked me, and I check my watch. I'm on lunch starting now, actually. Now I look around at all my stuff like it overwhelms me. I've gotten pretty convincing at this. Don't you miss the days when you could just trust anyone, I say. I shake my head. Not like today. Now I could run up the stairs over there into my favorite sandwich shop, order me a Monty's Manwich, and throw him some of my tip money, and then run back down here and be back in under 3 minutes. And you know what? I gesture to my stuff, and the professor grins. Your Selmer and all your money would be gone, he says, and no one would have seen a thing. Exactly. I start to gather things up, moving heavily like the water bottle that's 2 inches from my case. There's a separate trip from the backpack right next to it. I'm about to throw in a sigh for good measure, but it's not necessary. Monty's Manwich, he asks me, holding up a hand to stop my packing. I had already stopped. Yes, sir, I always ask for no lettuce, though. He tells me no worries and that he needs lunch, too, so I make a big show of moving to my open sacks case. When I crouch over it, I reach for the quarters first instead of the bills. He stops me, and I drop the quarters before he's even got the offer out. I was going to give you a little something anyway, he says, waving at my case. I'll tip you with a sandwich instead.